From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. A new COVID booster dose is about to be approved. This is just in time because there is a new variant that's making the rounds. Also, many hospitals and health clinics in Idaho and, frankly, in other parts of the country are dropping their mask requirements as mask fatigue just continues to grow. However, is that a good idea? How do folks who are in the high-risk category for COVID-19 feel about this move? Well, joining us today to talk about all of that is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. And remember, if you have a public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, it's really good to have you on the program.
Well, thanks, Gemma. Good to be with you.
Okay, before we get to what's going on with this new booster shot, can we talk about this new subvariant of COVID? I don't know if I'm going to say it right. I think it's called Arcturus. And
you got it.
I haven't heard a lot about it. I mean, little snippets here and there, Dr. Pate. But talk to us about this.
Yeah, so this is the variant that I first mentioned on your show last week when I had gotten the news about some of the hospitals going mask optional, that, you know, we still needed to be concerned that there are new variants. And of course, we never know how new variants are going to act until they if they get to a high enough percentage that they become the predominant circulating variant. But what is I'm not alarmed, but what is a little bit concerning about this variant, and for those that don't want to say Greek names, it's XBB.1.16. And this, remember to all your listeners, when the name of the variant starts with an X, that means it's a recombinant, which means that likely somebody was infected with two different viruses and they swapped genetic material to come out with something new. And so this is a recombinant. And in fact, it's a recombinant of two different subvariants of BA2, which you may remember the first wave with Omicron we had was BA1. Well, BA2 came after that. And so this is two different viruses that have kind of swapped material, and now we have this recombinant. And what we've seen about these recombinants that that get traction is it's because, one, they are more transmissible. Think about it as being more contagious. And the second is that they are getting better at evading our immune system. So I've previously talked that our immune system kind of has three different parts, the antibodies, the cells, and our first reaction, the innate part of the immunity. And this virus has, first of all, figured out ways to get around our antibodies, that part of the immune system. But now it's learning how to get around some of the cellular protection we have. So that's why these are a concern. And then what caused me to raise it last week, because we've seen many, many variants over the times that we've been on the show. But what concerned me is this was really taking off in India. And India had a big BA2 wave. So it certainly raises the question that, you know, perhaps people don't have as much immune protection as they might think they do. And what we saw was some preliminary indications that suggest it may actually be more causing a little bit more severe disease, in that India was seeing more people in their ICUs than we had seen with previous waves for a while, and even more people having to go on ventilators. So kind of reminiscent of back in the winter of 2001 and or 21. And the other thing that's we have seen with some of the other strains, kids get conjunctivitis, but what we're hearing from doctors in India is that people are getting really pretty profound conjunctivitis with this infection in some cases. I've seen some of the pictures, and obviously I've seen a lot of conjunctivitis as a doctor because it's frequent, but I've never seen conjunctivitis like I saw in these pictures. So I don't know how prevalent that's going to be, but just keep that in mind if you or your child are having particularly a lot of eye symptoms with something that you think is a cold, might be that. So now it's into the United States. And I mentioned on the show last week that it actually had shown up in the Boise water wastewater sampling for the first time, although I don't know where it is because the last update to the city water I can see is like a month ago with respect to the different variants. So I don't, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's taking off in the country. It's about 7%. So we probably won't really feel it until it gets up to closer to 50%, but it is growing rapidly.
Okay. And when you say conjunctivitis, basically this is pink eye. Right? That is a symptom?
Yeah. Think about it as pink eye with stuff, with goop coming out of your eyes.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. Think of that way. Not just the simple pink eye where it's discolored, but really like think about a runny nose. Now imagine that coming from your eyes.
It is fascinating to me, Dr. Pate, as we continue to see these new variants, that then all of a sudden there are new symptoms that come along with these variants.
Yes, and this is what I try to constantly battle in the narrative that goes on, is that it, you know, because we've had Omicron for so long, I think so many people have jumped to the conclusion, well, that's what we will be dealing with from now on. And I acknowledge that's mm-hmm. certainly possible. In fact, that would be my hope. But on the other hand, I think that you know, that certainty is misplaced, because what we have to worry about is, just as I talked about this being a recombinant where viruses swap genetic material, if you've got an immunocompromised person who still has Delta in them, and there are people out there with that, and then they get one of these newer ones, and then they form a recombination. I mentioned about a year ago that that's kind of my I think it's too much to call it a nightmare scenario, but that's my big concern, because if you were getting the Delta part that was making you so sick, remember when our hospital beds were full, but now combined with the Omicron parts of immune evasion and transmissibility, we could have a real problem on our hands. And in fact, we have already seen just recently one such recombinant called Deltacron pop up. Fortunately, I haven't seen it make much traction, but you do have to wonder if we could see something like that in the future. And the other source would be the strains that are circulating in wildlife. We just got evidence that we knew humans were infecting white-tailed deer in the United States, but now we see the virus is moving significantly within white-tailed deer populations. And that, again, puts us at risk that it can mutate in them in ways it wouldn't in a human, but then still be perhaps transmissible back to us. So I don't know that any of those things are going to happen. And I certainly hope it just continues to be various modifications of Omicron. But certainly, if anybody's telling you for certain what's going to happen, then don't believe that.
So let's talk about some news coming out of the FDA, and that is that yesterday they made the announcement that people 65 and older and those with weakened immunity can get another dose of the bivalent vaccine. So where are they in this process, Dr. Pate? And is this, you know, good news for folks?
Well, it's fabulous news. It's a little bit light news. I certainly wish they would have made this decision a few months ago. However, I'm delighted they made the decision. And this was widely anticipated, which is why I also criticized last year, why couldn't the hospitals just have waited just a week or two to allow mm-hmm. those that are at high risk and worried a chance to get boosted. And so here it is. So now, after the FDA modified the emergency use agreement that allows for this second booster now, now it is being heard by the CDC's vaccine committee today, which is ACIP. And that committee will make a decision. And then we're widely anticipating that the CDC director is likely to sign off on that late today. And so if so, then once that occurs, that's when providers can now administer the second booster for and again, the CDC committee may slightly modify this and the FDA give them some room to do so. So we'll have to wait and see what exactly they say. But what's anticipated is that folks over 65 who are at least 4 months out from their previous booster will be able to get a second booster now. And those that are immunocompromised that got their first bivalent booster can now get a second one as long as it's been 2 months since their previous booster.
And when will we know then if it goes, under 65? I mean, we've always kind of had this tiered system. I'm assuming that'll be the same way when we get official approval for this next dose.
Yeah. You know, first of all, for those that are immunocompromised or have underlying medical conditions that would their doctors would feel that they are immunocompromised, they can be under 65 and get boosted. For those that are under 65 who are still in pretty good health and would like to get boosted, this is still going to be a problem unless we see something surprising come out of today, which I'm not expecting to see. But I would just stay tuned. I'm hopeful that there's many of us that hoped they were going to go a little bit lower, 50 or 60 on the age group. But I would just stay tuned. I think it still could happen, but I think it's unlikely to happen today.
So, Dr. Pate, let's talk a little bit more about the decision by several hospitals and health systems in Idaho, but frankly, around the country. This is not unique to Idaho, who decided to drop their mask requirements. You wrote a blog about this, and I don't think it's a secret that you were not happy with how this change was rolled out. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So first of all, as I mentioned in my blog post and I mentioned on the radio show last week, you know, I certainly, while I always am a perfectionist, I'm also a realist. And I know that these mask requirements have been tough on hospitals. And I know that there's a lot of people who don't like these. And so I understand there's pressures on hospitals. I think my biggest criticism were around, one, the timing. I mean, I just really was in complete shock because I had no heads up. I had not been consulted and nobody seemed interested in my opinion, which is certainly fine. Nobody needs to listen to my opinion. But it came as a shock to me. And especially, why do it last week when we already knew this FDA and CDC meetings were scheduled this week to talk about boosters? Mm-hmm. Because who's going to be worried about the masking relaxation in healthcare facilities? Those people that are high risk, those people who have a lot of underlying medical conditions, those that are immunocompromised. And I talk to a lot of those people who have been scared about, you know, just going to the grocery store, going to get their hair done, going out to eat, those kinds of things. And many of them have been taking such precautions that they've never been infected. And now they're facing the situation where previously they could always go to the hospital and feel safe and protected. And now they realize that they may have been safer in their homes than they will be in a hospital. And I don't think that's a good thing for hospitals to message. And so my first point was timing. Why not, if you're going to do this, why not at least wait a week or two and let people that are really concerned like this at least have the chance to get boosted? Second, if you're going to do something like this, you know, explain the reasoning. And if you can't explain the reasoning, well, tell us that, you know, you can't tell us. But I saw so many of these announcements start off with things that just were verifiably untrue. And the problem is, it can be difficult when you have to give a message that you know some people aren't going to be happy about. You may kind of hedge and you want to kind of hem and haw about it and all. The problem is if you come up with something else, then you just take away your credibility. I mean, just be honest. People can accept that a lot better. And my other big criticism was, you know, when for these people who are a lot of them, I advise about, you know, if they have to go to a hospital or whatever, what can they do to protect themselves? Well, at least if you're going to be taking away something that they see protects them, the mask, then talk about, well, what else are you doing to help protect them? Because I think there's many things you could do. And this is reminiscent of my discussions with the school boards back a couple years ago when, you know, the decisions around were totally around masks or not masks. When I was trying to get the schools to understand, look, even if you can't mask, there's lots of other things we could do. So let's talk about those things. I could never get them interested. And so I think hospitals need to talk about what else are they doing and to recognize that these people are worried about their various the impact to their life if they get infected in a hospital. While we all know that the case fatality rate for COVID is, depending on the country, is somewhere around 1 or 2%. But if you look at people in the hospital that went in for some reason, they didn't have COVID, but they get COVID there. Now you're talking about the reports are 10 to 30%. And that shouldn't be surprising because guess who's in hospitals? People that are at the highest risk for COVID. So, you know, talk about what other things you can do. And in my blog post, I gave several examples of things that they could talk about. First of all, it just acknowledges these people. And second of all, it shows some empathy that you actually care. And then finally, you know, if you're going to be doing this, I think what would be really good to build trust with patients is, you know, give them a reporting of the what I call nosocomial COVID cases, that those that are caught in the hospital, how many cases in the hospital, what is the mortality rate associated with it, and are they going up or down, so that we can see whether has since we've gone mask optional, have those cases increased, what's the impact? But I don't see any transparency yet.
And Dr. Pate, you know, to play a little bit of devil's advocate here for a moment, you know, is it fair to say that hospitals and health clinics have probably gotten so much backlash since people have, you know, moved on, right? I say that in air quotes, from COVID. And is it it's got to be a really difficult balancing act to not, I guess, give in to that. But at the same time, at some point, you know, people are walking in without masks on. You know, people are not following the rule. So with that said, is it finally easier just to put your hands up and say, okay, we will take this away. Yet, if we need to, we will bring it back. At the same time, that could end up being harder to enforce at the end of the day.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And listen, you know, having been CEO, I can certainly understand and imagine the pressures that are on people from all angles. And so I don't dismiss that a bit. What I think is, just as you and I have observed through this pandemic, though, recognize that the people that you are hearing from are not always representative of the total population you serve, and that there are people that appreciate that, count on that, and are terrified by the prospect of hospitals not doing it. So, you know, I could certainly understand if they get to the point and they say, you know, this is just isn't sustainable. We've got to do something else. Okay, I get that. That gets back to my point about being a realist. However, what I would say is don't go off to one extreme. You know, for example, if you read some of these statements and policies, technically, if you're being admitted for COVID, you don't have to wear a mask. And so I think that there are things that even if the realities of the situation is, look, we have to move in this direction, I could get that. What I could have done is help them say, look, here's, first of all, we never want to lose our credibility because this will get thrown back in their face. Well, wait a second. You decreased masks back when your counties were in high and substantial transmission before. Why does that now justify going back to it? And so you don't want to foreclose those opportunities where maybe you do have to go back to it and you don't want to look totally inconsistent. So I would have helped them with how to phrase this, how to not impair your credibility, because frankly, in a day when people can't figure out what the truth is, we need hospitals and doctors to be sources of truth. So I could have helped them how we state this. And then how do you acknowledge those people who actually could be harmed by this? And what are we going to do for them? And there's lots you could do. And as I say, I mentioned several possibilities, and there's more in my blog of things they could do to say, okay, look, we've got to deal with this group of people, but here's what we can do for those of you who are at high risk, who still are concerned, who still are wearing your mask out in public and haven't been infected and don't want your first infection to be in a hospital. And it could just come across so much better. And then you maintain your intellectual credibility to be able to make a change later.
Well, as always, Dr. Pate, we so appreciate your perspective and coming in and talking with us today. So thank you so very much.
My pleasure. Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
What if the greatest tragedy of your life was just covered up?
I've never seen anything like that before or after.
This is the story of the worst marine-on-marine friendly fire in modern history, a story kept from the public.
It's like, what did y'all have to hide?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast and its latest series, Taking Cover.